This is Inside the Magic Studio with your host, Robert Martin, the interview podcast with the best in Magic the Gathering. I'd like to thank GatheringMagic.com, where you can find this show and some of the best articles in Magic and Cool Stuff, Inc.
My guest this episode is a man you've heard revolutionize podcasting. His show, Limited Resources, is the most popular show on the MTGCast network. He also has broken through the mythical glass ceiling of podcasters transitioning into broadcasters on Wizards of the Coast. I'm joined by Marshall Sutcliffe.
Hey, Rob.
Hey. So let's talk about breaking through that glass ceiling. Because it is tough. There is no doubt about it that there is a challenge for moving from doing a podcast to doing actual live coverage. Now, your first soiree in that was down at Grand Prix Austin. From there, how did it all come together for you moving from doing it for a round in the booth to getting a job with Wizards of the Coast?
Well, so it was, it sounds weird to say, but there was definitely a big luck factor involved. I went down to GP Austin to play, and I played and I made day two. And after my tournament was over, that's when I got to go in the booth with, both BDM and Rich, who happened to be there, which, by the way, that doesn't happen very often either. This was sort of at the onset of Wizards pushing for more, Grand Prix coverage. And so I was lucky enough to get to meet Rich. I hadn't talked to him in person up until that point, and I had been kind of buddies with BDM. We drafted a few times, and we sort of shared that passion, you know, for drafting and that kind of thing. So I kind of knew him, but they let me go on the booth, and it went pretty well. I was in there for a couple of rounds. That was it. It was short. I got to help out on coverage a little bit too. Stood behind eventual winner Raphael Levy as he drafted his top eight deck, and I got to take some notes. That way I'd have something to bring to the table when we were at the desk, especially because there was three people. It's normally a two-person operation for these type of things. We can maybe talk about it later, but there's a general molding after sports broadcasting where there's a play-by-play person and there's a color commentary person, and those are two very different roles. And Magic is still kind of finding who is who and what is what, and what the best balance is for that. For sports, it's very well defined. For Magic, it's a little bit less, but we're working towards it anyway. I was able to fit in, and I didn't talk over them too much, and we got along in the booth, and I was able to say some insightful things or whatever in a reasonable way. And this was the time when they were ramping up, and so I was lucky enough that the coverage coordinator was there, Greg, and he was like, hey, he's like, wanted to see if you'd be interested in doing these GPs, and I was like, well, yeah, that'd be fantastic. I hadn't really given it a ton of thought until that point. I mean, I definitely thought about it. I remember being in a different GP where Rashad was actually doing his GG's live thing from there as well. And I was playing in that GP that was in San Diego the last time. And, I remember looking at the booth and being like, I want to do that. Like, that'd be fun. I wouldn't say it was like a life goal for me at that point, but it was something that I was like, I wonder how that happens, And so I was kind of keeping my eye on it, but I was pretty busy at the time. I had my full-time job. I was doing the podcasts and videos and stuff. So it wasn't really something that I was able to just be like, put at the forefront of my mind. But when he offered, I was like, yeah, like I didn't even hesitate. I just said, yep, that sounds really fun. He kind of gave me the lowdown on how it all worked. And just said, I'll get a hold of you when we get home, cause he lives out here, cause he works at Wizards, of course, and which isn't too far from where I live in Seattle here. So yeah, anyway, and then I did a couple of events. I did GP Seattle was my first one. I remember being really nervous, and because it was interesting because I don't actually get nervous from cameras or mics or anything. That stuff's never really bothered me, which is, I think it's just an ignorance is bliss. Like, I just don't really think about it, so it doesn't get me. But what does make me nervous is not knowing the processes around what's going to happen. And I didn't. I had no idea. I'd never done any video work. And I don't know when we're on, when we're not. How do we tell? What am I supposed to do? Like, I just didn't have anything to go off of. So thankfully, I was lucky enough to be in the booth with BDM that weekend, though. And, what a great mentor. The guy is just he's fantastic at that. So I had a good weekend, and things went well. I was able to get into a comfort zone pretty quickly, thanks to BDM. And And after that event, they said, look, we've got a pro tour coming up. And again, and this is what I was talking about with the luck factor, Rob, is just the timing was right. You know, they were not only ramping up doing Grand Prix coverage more, but also ramping up doing the pro tour coverage with some big advancements and some, you know, broadening out the scope of what they were doing there. So they needed some people, and they're like, look, you know, like we like what you did in the booth, and we want you to come out there. And I was certainly not going to turn that opportunity down. And the rest kind of has taken care of itself from there.
Well, let's talk about the preparation for doing a pro tour.
Sure.
One of the things that a lot of people don't get when it comes to coverage is there is a lot of prep work that goes into it.
Oh, yeah.
There's photos all the time that Wizards puts up of Greg and then Rich BDM, yourself, or whoever else is working there. And you're sitting at this table and it's going over coverage and how things go. Can you give the people a little insight on what a meeting before a pro tour is like?
Yeah, sure. So basically, we call that Thursday. So people will usually fly into wherever the location is on Tuesday or Wednesday, and we'll hang out, we'll eat, we'll kind of see what's going on. Sometimes we do some training, you know, they'll put us through different, you know, media training and stuff. And then, but by Thursday, it's time for the pro tour type stuff. And so we'll have a meeting with the entire coverage team. That's with, the writers and the video team. There's two different sides to coverage, and we'll talk about major storylines for the weekend. We'll talk about things that we want to make sure that we talk about, as far as, you know, decks that are going on, players that have a special story or a, you know, significant thing going on, is that kind of thing. And then we'll usually break off into two separate groups again, so that we can drill down even further. So the video team and the text team will kind of get into two separate tables. And, you know, we take guidance from Greg. He provides us with our leadership, and he's kind of the guy that's on top of everything. I mean, he just knows it all, and it's great. You know, if you've ever had a chance to work for a really good manager, it's like that. You know, he knows the answers. He knows where it's going. He has a vision for it. He knows the answers to your questions when you have them. He has already thought of the concerns that you bring up in the meeting. He's like, yep, I've thought about that, and we're doing this for that. You know, and it's just like, geez, this guy is just on top of all this stuff. So he's great. Now, before the meeting, there's prep too, though, which is interesting. One of the big hurdles, I think, is knowing the card names. And I know that sounds easy because we all just kind of end up knowing the card names. Every Magic player does that. But one thing that you have to remember is the timing of the pro tours in relation to when they come out, when the new sets come out in real life. And there's not that much time in between. You know, there's a pre-release and a release, and now we get the site, get the set on Magic Online for a little while. And that's where I learn all the names, because I, you know, I'm a Magic Online just junkie. You know, it's like my favorite thing to do in the world almost. And so I'll learn all the names really quickly once it's online. But before that, you know, I've got three or four drafts under my belt, a few sealed events, not a whole lot. So I'll have to sit there and just kind of look card by card. Cause remember, you know, we've got to pick them up off the camera and that kind of stuff. You know, we really need to be familiar with these cards. And so that's one of the things that we have to do. Another thing that we do is, if we have a special segment that we need to get ready for, it can be a personal segment like we've been doing. You know, I've got one where I do kind of a limited boot camp type thing, because that's kind of my goal, is, you know, to get people to be better at Magic through limited. And, you know, and I get to go on there and kind of do a little 5 or 10 minute clip about some topic that I want to talk about. And I have to prepare for that. Another one that we'll do is bigger stuff. Like, you know how those, we have all those graphics and stuff when we're over on the news desk.
Yep.
Well, we have to figure out what we want for those, and we have to get them into the people so that they can build them. We've got a great team that will build those graphics for us, but man, we got to tell them what we want, you know? So we've got to do stuff like that. And then our coverage team's really lucky. We have Rich Hagen and Rich is so, like, there's kind of two types of people on the coverage team. There's the people that like to just kind of wing it. Myself, BDM, Zach Hill, you know, we're very much like that. I like to go in there. I like to have the knowledge background that I need, and then I like to make it happen, you know, live on the air. Let's just do it. It'll be cool. We'll make it work. Rich is the opposite. He has to prepare, you know, he has to have everything scripted and written out, and he's to his credit, he's come away from that quite a bit, but you know, where he can kind of go in between roles, but his natural state is preparedness. And I got to say, we all benefit from that because he'll show up and he'll have paperwork and documents and things all set, all ready to go. He'll have a schedule. He'll have ideas for what we can do to fill in gaps when we need to. And he just kind of takes a leadership role in some ways, like a producer kind of role. He's also on the air, but he also will take this role of kind of guiding where we can go when there's gaps. And I got to say, yeah, we're just lucky to have him.
One of the nice things about being prepared like that, you talk about the fact that things happen in a moment's notice within Magic. You've had storylines like the last Pro Tour with Jerry breaking through, with Melissa making the top eight. Things like that, that you can have something to snap go to for them, is such an advantage. And with Rich providing something like that, that's got to make, well, your job a lot easier, because he can bring up a fact that you and Zach or you and BDM can expound on.
That's right. And we're good at talking. Like, you know, I can talk and Zach can talk. God knows Zach can talk. And BDM can go forever. So, you know, that's not the problem. But we need a, you know, just a jumping off point, kind of a, you know, some guidance. And, yeah, that kind of stuff is the kind of stuff that Rich is – I mean, Rich can talk too. Don't get me wrong. But but he's really great about coming up with those storylines and those things ahead of time so that we have things in between. Because, you know, the Pro Tours especially are fantastic in the sense that they provide those storylines for us, right? I mean, Melissa top eighting, great stuff, right? You know, both Owen and Jerry top eighting, fantastic. I mean, just great storylines that have history and, you know, kind of this wide arc to them and historical significance. And so, you know, that makes it easier on us. But there are those other times, you know, early in the tournament, those kind of things aren't set in stone yet. We don't know what's going to happen later on, and we need stuff to talk about. That's where Rich is great.
You're really expanding how you guys communicate within these tournaments. It's not just if you're on the screen, that's the only way you're communicating. You're communicating with people all over the place. Is this a conscious expansion by Wizards to do this, or is this something that you guys just kind of took on your own?
Yeah, it's more just us doing it. I mean, I've always been like that. You know, I've always thought that the correct approach for the podcast, which is of course where this whole thing started for me, was to be in the trenches, so to speak, you know, was to be at ground level with the people that we were talking to. I never wanted the show to be something where we were, you know, kind of standing up on some pillar and, you know, just like, this is exactly how you should do these things. And I have spoken and now I will walk away. Right. That to me, Magic is way, way too complex to take that kind of a stance. So my approach has always been, well, let's talk, right? Like, let's, you know, you've got an idea. I can give you information or facts or opinions to either support it or to deny it. And then you can come back at me and say, well, this is why I think this. And I can say, well, this, I find this more to be true. And, you know, we can actually get somewhere with it, right? Where we can come to a truth or at least exchange some knowledge, where if one person's just sort of saying something and the other person is expected to just listen, there's a lot less of that going on. And it puts a lot more pressure on the person to be right who's speaking. So for me, you know, social media has always been kind of a no-brainer. The other guys, same thing. Like, we don't, I mean, you know, they don't like tell us, well, you need to be on Twitter saying things to people or, you know, make your Facebook page. They don't do anything like that. Like, we are who we are outside of the coverage thing. And I mean, I'm sure that they appreciate that we're not, you know, like vulgar on there or saying anything too. I mean, you know, like vulgar, like I swear a lot, like not on the show. And sometimes people are like, oh, I didn't even know it. Like, I can't imagine you swearing. And I'm like, oh man, if you knew me in real life, like I love swearing. It's one of my favorite things. But, you know, I don't do it on social media just because, like, I don't, there's kids that follow me on there and stuff. And like, it doesn't really add, like, it's just something to do, I think, for when you're in speech or whatever. But like, for me, it doesn't like add anything beneficial to like the podcast or to the thing. So like, yeah, you know, as long as we don't step out of line too hard, generally speaking, yeah, we can do whatever we want on the social media. And most of us do.
The fact that a Pro Tour event is so long during the day, How do you guys manage to keep yourselves energized?
So that's a great question, Rob, because it's kind of like a roller coaster. So like, You get in on Thursday, Wednesday, Tuesday, somewhere around there. You do some drafts, you eat some food, you have some meetings, you start getting prepared, right? Then Friday comes and it's like, whoa, Friday's here. There's a buzz in the room, right? Nobody knows what's going to happen. All the players are there and anything could happen. They all are live to top eight. And it's just this like, you know, what decks are we going to see? What cards are going to break out? What's going to happen? So it's like this frenzy and it's very easy to get excited for that. That's not hard at all. Now, when Friday ends, you're tired. I mean, I am mentally just destroyed by the end of Friday. Usually we'll slink off to grab some food and then some people will say, hey, do you guys want to draft? And then like enough people will be like, nope, I'm going to bed, that we won't. And so, yeah, so now waking up Saturday, that's the tough one because Saturday is in many ways the same as Friday. There's a lot more established things going on with the tournament, but from a workload perspective, it's a repeat for the most part. And that's a very long day. You know, I don't drink coffee or anything. I don't like it. And I try not to drink caffeine. Like, I don't really have a strong reason for that, but I just never have. And I figure, like, it's probably healthier not to, and I don't want to get dependent on it or whatever. So I don't do any of that. Some of the guys do, though. You know, it's just like constant coffee and energy drinks or whatever to get them through. But for me, man, it's tough. Like, Saturdays, it's really rough because you're often jet-lagged as well. And you know, that's a lot going on. And when I get in, it's, you got to get going on Saturday. Now, once you get in the rhythm of it, the flow of Saturday and that kind of thing, it's not bad. Like, you know, you're exciting, cool, you're excited. It's cool. Things are happening. And you just kind of go with it. Now on the end of Saturday, man, you feel like a train hit you. Like I get so tired at the end of Saturday. I usually have a headache or something by then cause I'm tired and I'm ready to eat and then sleep. Now, Sunday, you mentioned Sunday, Rob, and Sunday's a little different. It's interesting because Sunday, you know, the roles are polarized on Sunday. Like, I'm on the news desk all day. It's mine. In fact, I'm kind of in charge of the news desk on Sunday. So the stuff that we do on that day is up to me. Where on the other 2 days, it's a little bit more, you know, in Rich's ball court, in all of our court, you know, we kind of figure it out as we go. Rich, BDM, they're in the booth. So that's it. Like, they're sitting in the booth and they're doing top eight coverage all day, and that's that. So, you know, they just get to focus on that, and I get to focus on being at the desk. Now, the good part about Sunday is that I get to watch a lot of Magic because, you know, after I get all my segments set up and everything goes, you know, it's downtime. I mean, I'm waiting for the rounds to end before they throw it back to me. And so what I'll usually do is grab a headset and watch because I want stuff to talk about, but also just because I love watching Magic as much as everybody else. So I get to just sit there and watch the games. Then there's this big flurry when the games end because they throw it to me and I'm on the desk and I'm talking to people and I'm kind of running the show. And we do that until somebody in my ear tells me that we're about ready to go back down to the feature match area. And then I have to try to shut up whoever's talking, you know, gently, and then transition it back to a BDM and Rich in the booth. And so then it's like this sort of flurry of activity for an unknown amount of time. And then again, I get to watch Magic. So Sunday is actually nice because even though it's a little hectic with that back and forth, it's actually kind of relaxing. And I actually get a chance to sit back and just quietly watch some matches of Magic, which is really nice.
Okay. I'm going to ask you something I saw on coverage. And sure. I don't know if this would be my picture of what happened may or may not be correct.
Okay.
You were doing a draft review with John Finkel.
Yes.
I think it was your first one, correct?
It was in Barcelona, yep.
The first things come up and you pointed at a couple cards and you said, what about this one? And mm-hmm. John snap turned to you and said, no.
Yeah.
Okay. There was a moment there where maybe my eye observed something it didn't. You like took a step back mentally. I think maybe the moment hit you and then you kind of worked your way back into it.
Sure.
Am I correct on this? Was it just because maybe it was John saying this to you or I don't know.
Yeah. I don't remember the specifics that well. I haven't watched that, but I do remember that happening where I brought up, you know, I was just kind of trying to like set him up like, oh, maybe this card, this card, this card. And he's like, no. He's like, I don't even look at those cards. I want this one over here. Mm-hmm. Right. But the thing is like, I mean, sure, that means I have to make a little bit of an adjustment on the fly and just say, okay, so you don't like these ones, but now I'm curious, right? Like, well, why, right? Like, because, I mean, I play a lot and, you know, I'm usually not coming from like a stance of not knowing. So I'm curious to see why. But for me, I love that stuff, man. Like when people will disagree a little bit or add a little controversy or, you know, something like that, a little bit, not overdoing it, right? You don't want somebody who's just like, nope, nope, nope. You know, that's just not a conversation, right?
Yes.
But John is the type of guy who's going to be a straight shooter with you, right? He's not going to like kind of go along with what you say if he doesn't agree. He's going to be like, and I've talked to him, you know, quite a few times now, and he's like that at all times. And he'll just be like, no, this is what I think. And, you know, his opinion's very valuable, right? Like people want to know what he thinks about this. Even if you don't agree with it, there's always something to be taken from it because he's, you know, arguably the best Magic player ever. And so you're going to listen to what he has to say. And so when he did that on my deck tech, I was very happy about it. I mean, maybe I don't remember exactly how I reacted in the moment. I mean, I don't think I stopped the thing or anything, but the key is that I love that. And, you know, he actually came up after and he said, hey, he's like, that was okay, right? You know, something like that, right? And I was like, it was great. Like, I don't even know. Like, it's interesting because I like getting into the nitty gritty like that. And I like it when people disagree. And I think it made the deck tech better that he did it. And I would expect him to do it again in the future if we ever do it.
I asked him about that off air.
Uh-huh.
Because some of my best segments never come up on air. I asked him off air. And I said, it looked like you made him pause for a minute. And he said, the exact same thing. He said, that was not my intention. He said, if you ask me a question, I want to tell you exactly what I think.
Yeah. And I respect that a lot.
And it was so good to hear you say, hey, this is what I was expect. This is what I was hoping to get. And this is what I got from it. So no, you confirmed that for me because I had not known this ahead of time. It just looked on camera like he did it and you were like, oh, was he supposed to do that? It was just like there was like this like.
Yeah, that's probably right. I mean, it's just more like me kind of just thinking, OK, well, if he isn't doing that, then where are we going here? Right. Because like I don't like when you're the interviewer, the presenter, you know, this, Rob, because you're really good at it, is you want to open the door for the person to walk through, but you don't want to like put them in a path that they can't get out of. Right. It's like, Here's an open, you know, not open-ended where you don't know what they're asking, but open-ended enough so that it's like, here's a canvas on which to paint your idea, right? But you don't want to give them a canvas the size of a postage stamp, but you also don't want to give them a wall, right? And so, you know, I kind of tried to give him a canvas and he said, I don't want that canvas, I want this canvas. And I'm like, okay, well, let's go over to this canvas then, you know, but that can take a little bit of adjustment.
The limited segments in Pro Tour events hosted by yourself. What player demographic is that segment targeting?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question, Rob, because I think it's often misunderstood. And this leads to kind of a bigger topic, too, is who are we all talking to, right? Like when I do my podcast, who am I talking to? When we do coverage, who are we really talking to? And I don't mean who are we aiming at. I mean, who's listening? And we've done studies. You know, there's a lot of data out there that Wizards has their hands on, and they've shared a little bit of it with us, and we know generally who we're talking to. And one of the things that came back from a recent one was that the audience that we have wants to get better at Magic. That's one of the reasons why they watch coverage. There's others, and that might not even be the most important one. I can't remember, but it is one of the reasons that they watch is, and this was a major point, you know, was because they feel like they can get better at Magic by watching. But we also know that the audience aren't pros, and they aren't all PTQ grinders. I mean, I've seen the numbers for the amount of people that we have watching, like for example, the last Pro Tour, and they're astronomical. They're huge numbers. They're very, I mean, I'm just like, wow, you know, especially when you talk about, you know, overall number of people that watch throughout the course of a weekend, right? Because that's an important metric. And I'm sorry, but the numbers that we have just don't support how many people play PTQs even.
Yeah.
Right. And so what that means is that we know that the players that are watching range a lot. The very vocal ones tend to be the ones that Rob, like you and I know, the people that are on Twitter, right?
Yep.
The people that have podcasts or that do videos or that, you know, that play on the Pro Tour. We know these people, but when you look at that group as a whole, it's pretty small. It feels big, but it's actually not that big. And the much, much bigger audience, you know, is much less experienced at Magic. A lot of them are new to it. a lot of people are new to Magic. It, you know, it kind of has this turnover. It's a pretty gentle process for Magic, thankfully, because people tend to play for a long time, longer than most any product. But still, it does have this new players coming in thing. And so who I'm talking to, like when I do those things, are not our friends, right? I understand that our friends will look at it and say, you know, maybe that's a little simplistic for what I'm doing. But I'm not aiming at you. Although quick aside, I do happen to think that the things that I bring up on those are very applicable to PTQ grinders. And I think a lot of them skipped over some of the stuff that I say on there, and they should revisit it. But I think that they kind of have that complex where it's like, I already know all this stuff. We're done with that, you know, so fair enough. But anyway, I'm actually talking to people that are FNM level. Right. Maybe they draft once a week or maybe just once a month, and that's drafting for them. But they still want to get better. Right. They don't want to walk in and just feel like they have no clue. Maybe they do one or two Magic Online drafts a week. You know, those people who are craving fundamentals. Right. They don't need to be told that this card is better than this card, because that helps them for like a month or maybe a draft. They need to be told things at a much higher level. You know, the last one I did, for example, was about how to, you know, it's called best case scenario mentality, where you basically try to figure out where a card will perform on average, right? Anybody can tell you what a good card is and what a bad card is, but not that many people can tell you why or how. And that's what I'm trying to give, you know, give that viewership.
I know I mentioned this to you because when I saw it, I immediately hit you up and saying, is this going to be available? Because I had my kids sit down and watch it.
Oh, that's great.
And if a 9-year-old can comprehend what you're saying and start applying it, it reaches across all age groups.
Yeah, that is great. I love hearing that, Robin. You know, and I've had other people say that they put it on video, like at their local game store, you know, and just said, hey guys, let's watch this. This is something that we can all learn from, right? And it's like, it's a simple thing. It's like less than 10 minutes. It's a concept, hopefully, that is, you know, graspable, and you can then apply it right away. And that's what I'm aiming for with those things. I mean, they're just supposed to be a, you know, a little thing. It's not a, you know, it's not some like big pillar of the stuff. It's just sort of like a get to know the, you know, what do you think about Magic, Marshall? Well, this is what I think, you know, where BDM will do pieces about like people, Zach will go over, you know, complex gameplay situations and, you know, that kind of stuff. It's just for each of us. You know, what are we about?
So now that you've managed to ingrate yourself inside of Wizards now, is it a different world for you playing Magic now because of being behind the scenes as well as being now playing the game?
Well, not really. I mean, the thing is, you know, I'm a contractor with them. I mean, I'm not a full-time employee. I can still play tournaments as long as I don't have any knowledge of the sets or whatever, which I don't. So, you know, like, it's not like I'm in there in the trenches with like Ryan, you know, like designing cards and making these big decisions behind the scenes. I mean, I'm friends with some Wizards employees and, you know, and I do work for them in a lot of ways. So I get a little bit of insight here and there, but it's not like I know anything that, you know, that other people don't. And so for me, like playing, it's about the same. I still love it. I still play every day. I play on Magic Online every day, and I play FNM whenever I'm in town, and I'll play PTQs, and I'm still trying to qualify for the Pro Tour and stuff. I play theoretically in GPs, but I haven't in forever because I'm working them all now. So I don't really have a chance that often to actually play them, which is, that's a bummer, but I mean, I do what I got to do. Right. And, yeah, so for me, it's not that different. I mean, if I was a full-time employee down there, that would be different. You know, I wouldn't be able to play anymore. I'd have to completely – or in sanctioned events, I'd have to completely adjust how I approach the game, the way I thought about it. But I haven't had to do that.
Well, what I'm trying to say is maybe the question needs to be a little bit rephrased.
Sure.
Because you've seen, I should say, coverage from now both sides of the table,
mm-hmm.
Does how you play – or how you look at Magic, has that changed now?
Oh, sure. I mean, absolutely. Like, I get a chance to watch the actual best players in the world play pretty often, up close and personal. And I'm lucky enough to be friends with a lot of them, too, or at least acquaintances, where I'm comfortable enough to walk up and be like, hey, so I was covering your match and you did this. what was up? What were you thinking? You know, or maybe I already know and I just want to confirm it. And I can be like, were you playing around this card? And they'll be like, yeah, that's what I was doing. I'm like, okay, great. That's what I thought. And I just needed to know. And man, I got to say, having access to people, like, I mean, I'd love to test with them. That would be the next level for me. But just having access to these people and getting to watch them up close and personal, it definitely changes the way you think about Magic.
Now that you've done in the booth as well as the desk, mm-hmm. and you do GPs and you're out there, and then you're out there on an island all day.
Yep.
What next do you want to do for Wizards of the Coast?
Yeah, that's a rough one. I'm not sure. Right now, I'm kind of in a holding pattern, and I'm happy with it. Like, I'm trying to establish myself on the coverage team as much as I can. I'm trying to do the best job that I can. I don't turn them down on anything. You know, I'm just like, yep, you got it. Anything, you know, I want to make the best impression that I can, and I want to be the best commentator that I can. So I'm trying hard. Remember, I didn't have any actual experience with commentating before this, so, you know, I had the podcast, which is a good foundation to start from, but like, I still have some fundamentals that I'd like to get shored up before I feel like really, really confident about the whole thing. I mean, I feel fine, but I just mean, you know, before I really feel like, yeah, I got this thing down, I really need to kind of shore those up. And so my goals are within coverage for now. I mean, would I want to work at actual Wizards? I don't know. Like, that's just one of the hardest questions, because there's obviously a lot of upside down there. I know a lot of the people. It seems like just a great place to work. It's working on something that I deeply care about, which I haven't done before. So that would be awesome. And and it's just a good job in general. But, you know, man, I'd have to give up a lot. No podcasts. I'd have to cut back the coverage a lot. I wouldn't be able to play on Magic Online. I wouldn't be able to play in sanctioned events. Like, I don't know if I could justify that kind of thing unless I was doing something that, you know, I really, really wanted to do down there. So for now, get through this year and kind of see where I come out on the other end. I mean, you know, I recently quit my job, you know, my corporate job, so I could do this stuff. And so I'm still like piecing together, you know, all of the income and the lifestyle and all those things to kind of figure out if this is something that I can do perpetually or not. Yeah.
How difficult was the decision for you to quit your job?
No, it was really hard. I thought about it for about a year. I was thinking about it before I even got the coverage gig at all. Just because, man, it's rough. You know, like you get a good job, and I was pretty lucky to get the job. You know, I had a friend that worked at the company that I worked at, and he kind of got me in the door, and then I established myself, and they hired me on full time, and I was there for about 6 years, and I was comfortable and things were good. But man, you just stare at that cubicle wall and it eats at you, and you know you shouldn't want to get a different job because it's a good job, but man, it just gets you and gets you and gets you further and further down, and eventually you have to do something about it. And so what I ended up doing was deciding that it was time to quit. Now, that also coincided with me getting the coverage gigs and stuff so that I could support myself on some level, but that's a huge jump, right? I mean, I play poker too, so I do that. And then I had the coverage stuff and the podcast and a couple of things. So it was one of those things where, you know, I really had to make a decision about what I wanted to do with my life, because man, that corporate job just wasn't hacking it. I was not happy there. And the thing is that it wasn't an unhappy job. It was a fine job. It just was me. I just didn't fit. Like, I hated getting up in the morning. I've just always been a night person, so that sucked. And I was bored and all that stuff. And, you know, I just decided to take the jump. You know, I was kind of inspired by people like BDM and those guys who kind of have done it on their own and have done their own thing. And I'm just like, man, I just don't want to stay here anymore and keep doing this. And it was scary. I mean, I'm on my own now. Like, if I don't get up and go to the poker table, if I don't get up and make this content every day, you know, make a video, do the podcast, write the article or the column, you know, get out to these events and travel and do all this stuff, I don't make any money. Like, I will, you know, financially fail, and I will have to do something else. And that's a lot of pressure, but I gotta say, it feels a hell of a lot better having that responsibility than going to a job that I didn't really care about, even if I was making more money than I do now.
When it comes to Magic, people have dreams of what they want to achieve and goals they want to set. My guest on this episode, Marshall Sutcliffe, has managed to achieve those goals. He's broken through barriers. He's taken chances with his career and what's going on with his life to live the dream that most of us in podcasting want to do. We all want to do some form of coverage or other things like that. I'd like to thank Marshall Sutcliffe for being on the show this week. And if you want to get this show and many other great articles on magic, you can go to GatheringMagic.com and Cool Stuff, Inc. for sponsoring the show. And again, if you'd like to reach me, the show's email is themagicstudio1@gmail.com, where I take all questions and comments and feedbacks about the show, along with my personal account, TheBeamy, on Twitter, along with The Magic Studio. So follow us. You get updates on the show, people, questions, things ahead of time that you may not get otherwise until the next episode. And thank you for listening.